So what was your takeaway from last night's Republican presidential candidate debate? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, August 7th. Last night was the first debate among the top Republican presidential candidates based on recent polls, and chaos erupted in Cleveland right from the start when the 10 candidates were asked who was willing to pledge his support to the eventual nominee of the Republican Party and who was unwilling to pledge to not run an independent campaign against that person. Only Donald Trump raised his hand.
Mr. Trump, to be clear, you're standing on a Republican primary.
I fully understand.
The place where the RNC will give the nominee the nod.
I fully understand.
And that experts say an independent run would almost certainly hand the race over to Democrats and likely another Clinton. You can't say tonight that you can make that pledge.
I cannot say. I have to respect the person that, if it's not me, the person that wins. If I do win and I'm leading by quite a bit, that's what I want to do. I can totally make that pledge. If I'm the nominee, I will pledge I will not run as an independent.
So did Donald Trump hurt or help his cause there? What about Scott Walker? Did he hold his own in last night's debate? Did any other candidate impress you or surprise you? We are going to break down the debate with a political scientist and welcome your questions and your reactions to 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Our guest is Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa, Faculty Advisor to the University of Iowa College Republicans. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what was your what's your reaction to Donald Trump saying that he won't pledge to run an independent campaign against the eventual GOP nominee if it's not him?
Well, you know, what was interesting about that exchange, and I think they got slightly lost in it, in the fact that there were two things going on. One question was whether he would support the eventual Republican nominee, and the second question, really the bigger question, is whether he would mount an independent bid. And even in that clip you played, it sounded like at the very end of it he was suggesting, well, I won't run an independent bid. But the, what got the reaction, of course, and was the first question, which is whether he would support the Republican candidate. And, you know, quite frankly, a lot of people that say they will support the Republican candidate may, if they're not the nominee, often don't do that much in support. So in a sense, Trump was just being honest and saying, well, look, if it's not me, if I don't think the person is strong, you know, how much effort do I want to put into losing cause was effectively what he was saying.
Yeah. So is that going to hurt him or help him in any way?
You know, I don't think that much. I know some people are making a lot of it, but that's not something that is unknown, that it was pretty much known, and he'd been saying that in one way or another all along. So I don't know that that would necessarily hurt him. Plus, as we've sometimes seen with Trump, he changes his mind on things. And maybe, and like he said, if he does respect whoever gets the nomination, maybe he will support that person. So we just kind of have to wait and see.
Yeah, so is there, there's some murmurs out there, maybe more than murmurs, that that Donald Trump is in cahoots with the Clintons and that maybe Donald Trump wants Hillary Clinton to win. What do you make of all that?
Well, you know, I think that people are, some people at least, are trying to make sense of what Trump's doing, why he's doing it, and so forth. And we've seen a different version of this 4 years ago when he didn't actually mount a formal bid for the presidency and sort of teased a lot of people and ultimately said no. And this time he's gone further and he said yes, he's released documents and now participating in the debates. And a lot of people don't get why. What's he trying to do? And given what, at least in the eyes of some, the havoc that he seems to be playing with the Republican field and just the race in general, they're looking for some sort of answer. And some folks have suggested that, well, maybe this is his goal, create havoc in the Republican field, and to give, put the media attention on him, taking it away from the race as a whole, taking it away perhaps from Hillary Clinton, and ultimately serving her interests. And, you know, I don't see it that way myself, but I can see that some people might look for that as a justification for his being in the race and doing what he's doing.
Gary on Facebook says, Trump got the toughest questions aimed at him personally, which may or may not have been fair and balanced. Even so, the winner of the debate is Fox News. Well, what do you say about that?
Well, prior to the debate, I'd seen where Megyn Kelly had several times said that they were looking to have some really tough questions that were going to get the candidates off their talking points. Which, of course, is one of the reasons that these debates are often rather sleepy affairs, in that you hear talking points, and especially for those of us that follow this pretty closely, we've heard this a lot of these points many times before. And in fact, as I was taking notes last night, I said, okay, return to talking points, went to talking points, things like that, where I've heard this before. But for a lot of people, and especially in the first debate, to the extent the folks are starting to tune into this, maybe they haven't heard those points before. So in a sense, it is good to make your points, whatever they happen to be, about your resume or your bio or what have you. So, you know, in that sense, people are either going to tune in or not. But the fact that the questions were rather aimed at getting people off those talking points, as I mentioned last night, moderators were asking questions that were intended to provoke, challenge, and encourage interaction, and that they certainly did. Now, my guess is they kind of went a little bit too far on some of the questions, and your person that you mentioned on Facebook was saying that aimed at Trump, and I think other people were thinking that maybe too many questions were aimed at their candidate, whoever it happened to be. But basically, the moderators did their job, is that they really challenged the candidates to get off those talking points, and so it gave viewers a little bit more insight into sometimes the character of the candidates, but also what they really believe.
Yeah, any particular moments stand out to you as maybe a surprising, revealing moment that we didn't know about a particular candidate before?
Well, there certainly wasn't anything that really knocked out a particular candidate, but the one that, or at least one of the ones that I thought was a fairly important moment or revealing moment was one of the exchanges that Senator Paul had with Governor Christie, where they were really going at it over surveillance and so forth. And at the end, towards the end of it, Senator Paul threw the hug at Christie, which is, of course, when Christie hugged President Obama around the time of Superstorm Sandy, and a lot of Republicans are still haven't forgiven Christie for that hug because they believe that it ultimately hurt Romney in the 2012 campaign. And, you know, Paul sort of threw this out as a shot against Christie, and Christie had a very strong comeback in saying, well, and I can't recall how he phrased it exactly, but he basically saying, well, the hug that he thinks is important are the ones that he gave to, you know, survivors of 9/11. Right. And their families after trying to get them justice. And that was a really sharp comeback to that shot at him about that hug.
Well, Governor Walker spoke for only 6 minutes during the debate. WPR News, Wisconsin Public Radio News, reported that earlier this morning. So is that enough time for you know, the public to get to know candidates?
Well, you know, you're going to have that problem, and I didn't see a minute-by-minute breakdown. That seems like he probably got a little bit less than maybe some others. And I know that I was reviewing, this is how much of a political nerd I am, I was reviewing some of this stuff from the 2012 debates and all of that, and there were times when people were complaining about not getting enough questions. And you can sort of understand where the moderators maybe want to focus on the people that are ranked a little bit more highly in the polls at the time of a particular debate. And I do recall that Dr. Carson had mentioned at least once that he was maybe not getting the questions he wants. But sometimes it's enough. If, depending on your answers, if they're good answers and solid, maybe you don't have to hear a lot more, at least not in this type of context. But certainly, as Walker, one of the people that's higher ranked, would one have maybe have gotten a few more questions to have gotten his points out. But I thought he did well in the points that the questions he was asked. And one of the areas in particular was the foreign policy, national security. Often governors are not particularly well-versed in those issues, and that was certainly something that people had talked about regarding him before. And so I thought he did well on a couple of those questions.
We'll talk more about how Governor Walker did in last night's debate and the rest of the GOP field. What did you think of last night's debate among the top 10, or for that matter, the earlier debate among the seven who didn't make it to the main stage? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll ask our guest, Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa, if he thinks last night's debates will turn the field around in any way. Might some who are on the main stage go down to the not ready for prime time stage in the future? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are also reviewing last night's GOP presidential debate and welcoming your impressions and your questions. So who do you think won or lost or impressed or not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa, Faculty Advisor to the University of Iowa College Republicans. So, Professor Hagel, did anyone win that debate last night?
Well, for particularly early debates like this, it's less a matter of winning than it is not losing. That usually the candidates need to avoid any kind of gaffe or something they're going to have to walk back later on, and I usually say they also need to try to show likability and leadership, that they need to seem presidential in some sort, or maybe a little less so again in an early debate like this. I thought a few people had good moments. Christie in particular, as I mentioned earlier, had that good moment with Paul and some other times when he was sort of using to the best of his advantage that sort of straight talk persona that he has without going overboard and being overly aggressive. Although if you're a Paul supporter, you may have thought that he went too far in that exchange, but you know that kind of depends on your point of view. I don't think Trump particularly helped himself. So, again, maybe, you know, again, he wasn't over the top like he has been in some other instances, but probably didn't help himself particularly there. But so Christie, Rubio did very well, and even Governor Walker, like I said, it had those good answers in foreign policy, national security, and at one point was playing peacemaker while a couple of the other candidates seemed to be having a dust-up. So in that sense, he had a solid performance as well. So some of the candidates did well, held their own, justified why they're in the top tier, and some others really didn't have the moment that they needed to advance.
Yeah, so do you see the standings changing substantially after the debates last night?
Well, they probably will, particularly as some voters are introduced to candidates for the first time. While we were on break there, I was dealing with my Twitter addiction, and I was seeing how somebody had checked to see increases in Twitter followers, and Dr. Carson had the most by more than twice the next person, which is Rubio, and what that suggests to me is that he's still a fairly unknown person to a lot of voters, which is not surprising. He's not a politician, so he hasn't been in the news the same way, and so in a sense like that, if somebody comes on and Carson does well, and he had very, very good comments as well, despite his low-key kind of approach to things, and so that can perhaps raise him up in the polls to a certain extent. And one of the things that we may see is that because apparently in the eyes of most people, Carly Fiorina won the early debate, that there's some suggestion that she may rise in the polls substantially, which would suggest that one of those in the top 10 may then fall out of the top 10 and not be on the main stage for the next debate.
We are talking with Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa, about last night's Republican presidential candidate debates and wondering what you think, what questions you have. Do you think someone shined in particular or did anyone falter in particular? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Let me play one of the questions and answers presented to Governor Walker in last night's debate.
You recently signed an abortion law in Wisconsin that does have an exception for the mother's life, but you are on record as having objected to it. Would you really let a mother die rather than have an abortion? And with 83% of the American public in favor of a life exception, are you two out of the mainstream on this issue to win the general election?
Well, I'm pro-life. I've always been pro-life. And I've got a position I think is consistent with many Americans out there in that... And then I believe that that is an unborn child that's in need of protection out there. And I've said many a time that that unborn child can be protected, and there are many other alternatives that will also protect the life of that mother. That's been consistently proven. Unlike Hillary Clinton, who has a radical position in terms of support for Planned Parenthood, I defunded Planned Parenthood more than 4 years ago, long before any of these videos came out. I've got a position that's in line with everyday America.
All right. So, did he do all right there, Professor Hagel?
In a sense, he did. Although, obviously, where you stand on that issue is going to determine, for the most part, whether you think it was a good answer or not. In a sense, of course, he didn't answer the direct question that Megyn Kelly was asking him at that point, and say, "Well, okay, what about this exception if you have to make that hard choice?" And essentially Governor Walker was saying, "Well, let's try to not be in a position where you have to make that hard choice." But, of course, sometimes you do. The thing is, though, is in a certain sense, it's a moot point because the Supreme Court has indicated that you do need to have those exceptions for the life and health of the mother. And the health thing becomes a little fuzzy, and that's where the court has had some there have been cases dealing with that, and legislation has tried to deal with how expansive is the question of health. Nevertheless, that exception exists, and the Supreme Court has recognized it. So in a sense, it's a moot point. And then, of course, he did sort of pivot to Hillary Clinton's thing. But again, he basically tried to not answer the question directly, which is not going to make some people happy.
Let's go to Lakeisha in Waukesha. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. One question that I thought Governor Walker got off a little too easy on last night was the question related to how he would deal with the Black Lives Matter movement on a national scale. As an African-American female, it's one of those things that concerns me because I have family members who are black and male and all these types of things. But he didn't really answer the question. He flipped it over to talking about police training, and then they cut to commercial break and never really pressed him for an answer. And I'll take my comments off here. Thank you.
All right. Professor Hagel?
Yeah, I can't remember all of what Governor Walker said at that point, but I remember that question. I remember that also he did, as the caller was indicating, suggest the question has to do with training. And then he went on to that and talked about Sheriff Clark and talked about the way to approach these types of issues and remembering that the police, by and large, are trying to do the best they can. And if they are those that are maybe going beyond what they should be doing should be punished. And that's kind of standard stuff. It doesn't, as Carla was suggesting, perhaps doesn't directly answer that question about, well, what about this situation where we see many times instances in the news where someone has died as a result of what the police are doing and so forth. But we sort of see here kind of a different viewpoint as far as what's going on in this community and how they see it versus how other people see what's going on there. And that's kind of the conversation that's not happening in terms of that perception and how to deal with the perception, as well, of course, the actual situations that are occurring.
Yeah, apparently, Governor Walker said the best thing to do about policing is training police on the proper use of force, and that we need to support law enforcement, and that police who don't do their jobs well are very few. Let's go next to Robin in Menominee Falls. Hi, Robin.
Hi. I just had the comment that someone made last night, and I don't remember who it was, that the we're not going to get anywhere in regard to the ISIS situation until our president acknowledges that and says the words, these are radical Islamic terrorists, because he doesn't utter those words. Thank you.
First off, does President Obama never blame terrorism on on radical Islamic terrorists?
Well, it's an interesting thing where he tries to avoid saying it in direct terms. And what a number of the Republican candidates have suggested in one form or another is basically that you can't defeat an enemy that you can't define. And in that sense, they see this as a weakness on the part of President Obama, that he's not willing to come to grips with who it is that is the problem over there and what it actually is. And, of course, from President Obama's point of view, well, you don't want to indict all of Islam, everybody who believes in that religion, for the crimes of that the hardliners, whether it's ISIS, ISIL, the hardliners in Iran, wherever, whoever it is. But he sees that as a small, hardcore minority group, whereas others perhaps see it more broadly and it, at the very least still recognize that it is part of Islam, where President Obama has said, well, it's really a corruption of Islam. And so there's that sort of theological discussion that's occurring too. And it's something that, again, at least for the Republican candidates, that they don't see that they need to make that distinction because of the religious nature of what the people that are doing and engaging in these atrocities are basing it on, at least in their own words.
Yeah. It was Ted Cruz, apparently, and the quote was, "We will not defeat radical Islamic terrorism so long as we have a president unwilling to utter the words radical Islamic terrorism." So let's talk a little bit about how Ted Cruz did.
Well, Ted Cruz, as your listeners may be aware, is a very smart guy, of course, and in college was a champion debater. And so people were expecting high things from him on this type of stage. But as many probably are also aware, that the type of debate that occurs in either high school or college is quite different than this kind of political debate. And so he didn't really have that much of a chance to shine. And he sometimes has a particular style of speaking that doesn't necessarily fit particularly well with this type of fast-paced, you know, shooting questions, shooting responses back action. Sometimes he likes to talk a little bit more slowly to emphasize his answers. And he did that a few times last night and was able to sort of make a few points, but other times he wasn't able to. And so I think that he didn't hurt himself necessarily, again, assuming that you don't disagree with him right from the start, but didn't have really an opportunity to shine as maybe some people were expecting, given his rhetorical skills.
Yeah. So talk some about the issue of defeating terrorism. I noticed in the debate before the primetime debate, the other seven, that Lindsey Graham was just about every opportunity that he had, he was talking about how he will send troops to Iran and to Iraq and to everywhere. I mean, he was talking about boots on the ground to defeat terrorism. What do most of the Republican candidates propose we do that we're not doing now?
Well, it's a tough question because I think that for the most part, Republican candidates recognize that at this point, nobody is really that enthusiastic about going to war or, in fact, putting those boots on the ground. And in a sense, what Senator Graham was suggesting was that, look, this may not be something we want to do, but it may be something we have to do because the alternative is even worse. And he hadn't emphasized that quite so strongly before, but you're right, he did it many times last night. And even Senator Graham in that earlier debate, it was quite unlike his other appearances where he tried to inject humor into things more and use more of his personality. And he seemed it was a very subdued Graham that was there, and possibly because of the seriousness of the subject that he wanted to raise a lot. And I heard a few commentators suggest that possibly that was because maybe he realizes he won't get the nomination, but he wants to make sure that these points are made. And in a sense, it does put other Republican candidates on the spot in a bit, because then they have to deal with the question about, well, are you willing to put troops on the ground in some places? And it's, you know, in some sense, it could be a few, whether it's advisors or special forces or something like that, as opposed to a wholesale kind of ground troop situation. effectively going to war again, which, again, right now, Republican candidates realize that that's just not something that the American public has a taste for, including most Republicans who are tired of a war that had dragged on for too long at that point. So it's still an issue, and it's still something that a number of folks realize has to be on the table. You can't reject it entirely because, as I think it was actually Dr. Carson at one point said in a sort of a similar context, was saying, look, I don't want to telegraph what we're going to do. And that's been a criticism that Republicans have had of President Obama, where Obama said, well, I'm not going to do this or I'm not going to do that. And the response is often, well, you don't tell the enemy what you're going to do or not do. You just do it or not do it.
We are talking with Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. We are breaking down last night's debate, or debates, both of them, and wondering whether someone overwhelmed you or underwhelmed you. 1-800-642-1234. Who impressed? Who did not? What issues were you happy to hear discussed last night? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you think Governor Walker held his own? Did he do a good job? Is he going to stay at the top of the polls based on last night's performance? So, Professor Hagel, is Governor Walker going to stay at least in the top three as he was for this debate in terms of the polls? Is he still in the top tier after last night's performance?
I think so, especially here in Iowa, at least. We'll have to wait and see if any of the others move up, and that's the key. I thought Walker did have a solid performance, but we'll have to see if some of the others move up and manage to get into that top tier.
Yeah, we haven't talked a whole lot about Jeb Bush, and it was, you know, Trump, Jeb Bush, and Walker were, you know, the ones polling in the double digits, the top three before last night's debate. What about Jeb Bush? Did he do anything that, did he make a gaffe, or did he impress you in any way?
Jeb Bush was an interesting case where he basically had no real standout moments. He answered some questions well, in particular when he was challenged on the Common Core issue, which has been one of the main concerns that Republicans have for him. I thought he had a decent answer. Again, if you don't like Common Core, you're probably not going to go along with it, but he was trying to distinguish between saying, look, we need standards, but yes, I believe they should be at the state level, not the federal level. But when he did get that one question about, I think this was in follow-up to something Jindal had said, we're saying, look, we don't want the feds coming in, and that's the problem, is that once you open the door, that then the feds rush in and all of a sudden everything's regulated. And Bush really didn't have a response to that part of it and was sticking with the idea that it was the state that has to determine this. So at least he had an answer to it, but it was nothing that was really a standout. So I think it was kind of one of those steady-as-you-go kind of performances. And he's basically in a position, because of his name ID and because of his funding ability, that he can wait out some of the other candidates until the field thins a little bit, and then hopefully will perform better then.
Well, here, Chris on Facebook says, it was apparent that Roger Ailes, Fox News president, wanted Trump gone. He had by far the toughest questions. Watching and reading the expert opinions, Walker, Trump, and Jeb were the big losers of the night. Trump was mean. Jeb was bland, Walker bland, and just canned short talking points that never used his allotted time. A reaction to that?
Well, I recall before the debate, they're talking about how Governor Walker is not an exciting person in terms of how he comes across. And sometimes that can be a problem, sometimes not. It depends on what you're looking for. As I was saying before with Bush, that, yeah, he didn't really have that standout. It was kind of a steady-as-you-go sort of a thing. But then for both Walker and Bush, they didn't have huge gaps either. Now, again, if you disagree with what they're saying to start with, you're probably going to see it differently. But in terms of just sort of what the answers that they were given, that they were doing okay, if not great. I don't know that necessarily that the Fox moderators were picking on Trump necessarily. They were asking him some hard questions, but basically that's because Trump had been in the position and done things and said things in the past that really opened the door to those kinds of questions. That, you know, what about this? You had this different position previously, or you said these nasty things about this other person and need to explain that in certain ways. But those moderators were pretty tough on all the other candidates, too, in bringing up prior things that they had said about policies or about other candidates and basically asking to respond to them. And that was the whole idea behind getting them to, as I was saying
yeah,
before.
Yeah, and I got to jump in because we do have our newscast next, and we'll talk about some flip-flopping issues after the news. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are reviewing, we are recapping the first Republican presidential debate of the 2016 campaign last night in Cleveland. Talking with Tim Hagel, who is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa, faculty advisor to the University of Iowa College Republicans. One down, 10 to go. The next GOP debate will be in California. At the Ronald Reagan Library, it is a CNN debate on September the 16th. So, Professor Hagel, do you think we're going to have a smaller field by September 16th, that we won't, not everybody that was participating last night will still be around?
Well, that's always a good question, and it's certainly one that Republicans are interested in because of the large size of the current field, that they would certainly like to get it winnowed down to a certain extent. And one of the events that we used to hold here in Iowa that was canceled for this year, of course, is the Iowa Straw Poll, and a lot of folks were critical of it for a variety of reasons, but it did tend to thin out the field a little bit, and that's certainly something that's needed this time. It's hard to say. Again, nobody really had a hugely poor debate, and in sort of that news break, you've heard the quote from Professor Salvado saying that nobody did so badly that they have to drop out. The key will be more along the lines of whether they're able to get a sufficient amount of funding to continue. And sometimes you don't need a lot to do the kinds of things to get some media attention, but in other respects you do, and so we may see that some of the folks that maybe aren't polling well, those that were down around that 1%, some of the folks in that early debate might be the ones most likely to drop out at this point. Maybe Gilmore and Pataki. On the other hand, they just got in so recently that they may feel that they have the ability to stay in at least through a second debate and have that opportunity to speak to the public again and increase their poll numbers.
Governor Walker last night was asked about his changed position on comprehensive immigration reform. I think Chris Wallace at first said, hey, you know, for many years you supported a pathway to citizenship, and now you don't. What's the deal with that?
I acknowledge that. I said I actually listened to the American people, and I think people across America want a leader who's actually going to listen to them. I talked to border state governors and other elected officials. I looked at how this president, particularly through last November, messed up the immigration system in this country. Most importantly, I listened to the people of America. I believe we need to secure the border. I've been to the border with Governor Abbott in Texas and others, seeing the problems that they have there. There's international criminal organizations penetrating our southern-based borders, and we need to do something about it. Secure the border, enforce the law, no amnesty, and go forward with a legal immigration system that gives priority to American working families and wages.
All right. So did he, I guess, justify his what some would call his flip-flop on that issue?
Yeah, that's always going to be the key. Did you evolve on an issue, or did you flip-flop on an issue? And whether it gets defined as one or the other often depends on whether that person is moving to a position you like or one that you don't like. And so we've seen, and, you know, for the Democrats, we've seen where Hillary Clinton has changed on a number of issues, and there it seemed to be evolving, and she could basically say the same thing, saying, I listened to what the people were saying, and I changed my opinion. And listening and changing your opinion on things is not necessarily a bad thing, although with politicians, we often say, well, but didn't you believe this before? And so the candidate or the politician has to have a good reason as to why he or she did in fact change on a particular position. Now, it's not to say that that person is not going to get criticized by other folks later, particularly those whose positions he or she has moved away from, but it's still something that we often see from politicians where they do change as the issues sort of morph and change and different things are emphasized, and so there's a reason for them to change their position.
Yeah. And he said, I listened to the American people, and that's why I changed my position. So he was saying he was evolving because he listened.
Right. Yeah. I mean, basically, that you we want politicians to listen to us, of course, but obviously not everybody is saying the same thing or wants the same thing, so it's always a question of which group of people you're listening to or which arguments resonate more with you.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if you thought, you said that, you know, no one did so badly that they have to drop out, and many are saying that. Did Donald Trump, though, come across, as one of our Facebook commenters said, as just mean? I was looking at some focus group coverage following the debate, and some people who said they were Trump supporters no longer support him. They thought he came across as too as not presidential and too mean.
Well, you can make that argument even before the debate, you know, listening to him in a variety of events. Now, of course, we assume that there's a much larger audience for a debate, and again, that's what gives some of the candidates that were polling lower that opportunity to shine and increase their name ID. And I don't, as I was saying before, I don't think Trump was really as over the top as he has been in other events, but sometimes it doesn't sit well with people, and people do expect in a debate like this for somebody to be more presidential. You're trying to show that those leadership skills, and that's not something that Trump is as worried about. As he said during the debate, that this isn't a time for political correctness, and he's basically very straightforward, although he can be, you know, cross that line into being rude in certain respects. And I was mentioning before how Christie was able to do that straight talk, but not cross that line into being too aggressive or rude. And that's really not Trump's persona, that he says, as he indicated last night, he says what he thinks and doesn't seem to have that same sort of filter that other people have. And so, yeah, that can come across as being rude or mean to certain people. And at a certain point, people say, maybe this isn't what we really want in a president or, in this particular case, in a Republican nominee.
Yeah, Megyn Kelly asked him about calling women names like, you know, fat pig and such. And he said, Donald Trump said, I only said that about Rosie O'Donnell. And some people kind of, you know, moaned at that.
Right. And Rosie O'Donnell's not somebody who's particularly well-liked among the Republican electorate, but still, it's not necessarily that you want to make jokes like that. You know, in other contexts, if you're a comedian, if you're sort of an edgy sort of person, you can say that in another context, but to do it in a debate like this where your people are generally expecting a little bit more decorum, not so good.
Peter emails, I'm tuning in late, but last night I was saddened to see that the debates were not carried on the local TV channels in my area. Charter had it on a pay channel, and the only way I could watch was online. How does this help people with less access to information?
Well, it surprises me a little bit. I thought that it had been carried by the local Fox channels, but perhaps not. And if you don't have cable or don't have Fox News on your cable channel, it's a little bit difficult. Maybe it was online, but then not everybody has access or has the bandwidth or the inclination to sit in front of a computer for 2 hours watching something like that. So it does become a bit of a problem, and may see to a certain extent the same thing with the next debate that's on CNN, another cable channel. So they could have the same problems, but then that's where you rely on other news outlets or perhaps radio to carry the day for you.
Right. Call us now, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. If you would like to ask a question about the debate, or if you would like to weigh in on how you thought it went, we have a few minutes to go if you want to weigh in. Speaking of debates, there is also going to be a Democratic Party debates. Democratic National Committee released their debate schedule yesterday. Unlike the Republicans' 11 debates, the DNC is only doing 6, including the final one in Wisconsin. That will be in February or March. Your state, Professor Hagel, Iowa, has one in Des Moines on November 14th. Any thoughts on the Democrats having so many fewer debates?
Well, it's kind of a hard thing how to say how many debates are actually necessary. The last time around, the Republicans had something, I think it was 23 debates, which I thought was just far too many, and that the RNC thought it was far too many too, which is why they cut it down by half. But whether 12 debates or 6 debates is the correct number, I suppose that depends on who the candidates are and whether you're getting any particular value. That if it's what we think of as a sleepy affair where basically the candidates are repeating their talking points, then it's not particularly valuable. If you're a member of a particular party, you may not want to have a lot of debates because then you just have intra-party fighting and you're beating up your own candidates, or your candidates are beating up each other rather than going after the opponent, particularly in some of the later debates as you get closer to the nomination or the process has already started. So how many, there's no hard and fast number. But certainly you saw where both Senator Sanders and Governor O'Malley were complaining that there weren't enough debates, plus the fact that the first one doesn't occur until October for the Democrats, and they would certainly like to have something a little bit sooner as the process is unfolding for them.
Carrie called in to say, I'm surprised none of the candidates talked about Social Security and Medicare. I don't want them to go away or the retirement age to be raised. Walker had suggested that he would be open to raising the retirement age for Social Security benefits before the debate. Well, what about that? I mean, I guess they weren't directly asked. That's why they didn't talk about it.
Well, they did talk about the Medicare expansion. In fact, there was both Jindal and Kasich, two governors, current governors, had talked about it in different ways. That one had said that they didn't want to expand it, and Jindal sort of described what he needed to there. And Kasich, who expanded it, justified it in different terms. And that's something that, you know, governors of particular states, they can make that decision based on the economic situation in their state. More generally for Social Security, that then you get into just the question of entitlement reform. And this came up a little bit more in the earlier debate and has in other contexts where the question is, what are you going to do about this? Because the system is on the road to failure at this point, and something has to be done. And at a certain point, and I think this was the way that Governor Jindal had described it, is that you can't have more people in the cart than pulling the cart. And that's the problem with Social Security at this point. And so something needs to be done or the whole system will collapse. Now, whether that means raising the retirement age or something else, means testing it, for example, that something will need to be done. But all the candidates do seem to recognize that it has to be preserved, particularly for the people who are near retirement and have relied on the fact that they will be receiving these funds. So for them, it has to be protected, but for younger workers, that maybe adjustments have to be made. But yeah, the specific plan will vary.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa, Faculty Advisor to the University of Iowa College Republicans. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Christy Taylor, and to Elizabeth Deliquest for producing and directing this program. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned. We'll talk more politics coming up in the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.